I would definitely classify myself as somewhat starstruck, which I'm embarrassed to say because now it seems kind of silly knowing Nashville the way I do. But at the time, it just felt like such a bigger place even than just the bigness of the city compared to my podunk Oklahoma town that I was from. I mean, it was much bigger than Tulsa, but at the same time, it was just, it had this star quality to it even then, you know, much more so now, I would say.
My name is Jeff Little. This is The Attentionist.
Thinking about these things and educating the populace about them.
I'm sorry, I really don't know what you're driving at. I just don't.
Holler and holler and holler.
Perhaps the wall is bathed in a yellow light, or perhaps there's been some interference in Bob's brain, but that's how he sees the white wall.
This is Jeff Little. Welcome, friends. I'm so pleased that we would be together for another Attentionist podcast. So this podcast I'm very excited about because there was some amount of ambition involved. I had not one, but three guests and me. So it was four people, all jerry-rigged with microphones around my kitchen table. And we sat on August 23rd, 2015. And these guys, I'll give you their names. It's Eddie Bohr, Andy Harding, and Todd Colburn. We met almost 22 years to the day at Belmont University as first-year students. Eddie had been to college 1 year before, so he wasn't a true freshman, but the other three of us were, and essentially we experienced Belmont as freshmen in the sense that we were there all the first year together. And we met really early on. That comes up in the talk. And, man, these guys mean the world to me. And it's just, I think each of us are kind of like scratching our heads that we ever met at all, because it wasn't, it just sort of ran, it's just funny, the people you meet in college, and we never use this term, it's not a normal way to describe relationships, but like the idea of something being sticky when it comes to, when it comes to relationships with like friends, there's some friends you go through college with, you go through an intense time with, and that's wonderful. But the main thing that bonded you was the time in the thing. I hope that makes sense. And then when I say a sticky relationship, something about this arrangement is we continued to keep up with each other. We graduated in 1997. We have kept in each other's lives almost constantly since. And it's fun and it's funny and it's weird. And we've been there for life events on a variety of scale and level. And we still get together regularly. One of the four moved away for a couple years for an educational thing for his wife. But that's Andy. Andy came back. Other than that, all of us have lived in Nashville the whole time. And I don't know. It's the kind of thing where you can't be but so objective about your own life. But to me, it's fun. It's unusual. I love these guys. And I hope you'll enjoy this conversation. Again, Eddie Bohr, Andy Harding, Todd Colburn, myself, sort of leading the conversation. Thank you again for joining us today. This is Jeff Little. You're listening to the Attentionist Podcast.
I did some caddying at the local country club some of my years during high school in the summers, and then I worked at a chemical plant in the maintenance department at some point, but I think that was the summer after freshman year of college that I did that. So unemployed. I think my primary activity during the summer was doing I was involved with a group. It's called Campus Life, and the leader, Larry Schultz, had this singing group that he put together every summer, and we
Koinonia
Singers. Yes. Thank you, Todd. And so we would get together for a few weeks in the beginning of the summer and go over the songs and go over choreography. We had outfits we would wear.
Wish you had outfits.
I don't think I knew this.
We went on tour. This was kind of my second or third year doing this. We toured the Midwest and went to places like churches. We went to a youth prison and sang for the inmates of a prison north of Madison. We made our way to the Upper Peninsula, the UP, Larry was both the choir kind of choir director, choreographer, and the bus driver. And he had a big yellow school bus that he drove us around in. And we made our way down across Mackinac Island and into the mainland of Michigan, having dates along the way, and then put the bus on a ferry boat and took the ferry across Lake Michigan. I'm not sure where the departure city was in Michigan, but the arrival city was Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And then, you know, made our way back to southern Wisconsin, Janesville area where I'm from. And so that was my main activity that summer, I believe.
Your eventual major at Belmont was commercial dance, isn't it?
That's not correct. I was a chemistry major. Physics
that's
minor.
Right. Of course. talk to me about your family's impression of you going away to Belmont.
It was a pretty great situation for everybody. I had a very good family life. It was not the kind of thing where I was bitter and looking forward to getting out of town, but I was looking forward to going away to college. You know, a lot of my friends and peers were, you know, headed to UW-Madison, which is an incredible school. And maybe I should have gone there. I don't know, but
Andy.
But you know, it's a great school. It's just, you know, it was 40 minutes down the road from where I lived, and but I was, you know, I was just looking forward to getting away. And my mom is actually a graduate of Belmont University. She graduated. She was 1967 graduate of Belmont. So it was. You know, they were positive about it and excited for me.
I mean, you growing up then, you knew from your earliest days, hey, my mommy went to Belmont University or Belmont College, or there was a kind of familiarity.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess so. But I mean, it wasn't really talked about that much. So it wasn't until probably I was, you know, a teenager that I was even aware of where she went. We actually visited Nashville. We were passing through when I was a freshman in high school. And at the time, and I don't know how I developed this, you know, attraction, but I was interested in visiting Vanderbilt at that point as a freshman in high school, as a potential school. I was already thinking about college, and I really, you know, was attracted to Vanderbilt. And I don't know what it was about Vanderbilt or Nashville that drew me in. I was born in Tennessee, and we had moved to Wisconsin when I was 11. And I guess there was part of me who wanted to return and sort of be back here for some reason, but I wasn't even from Nashville, so I'm not sure what that is. But I think the fact that it was a larger city and it was away, but not completely foreign. I mean, there was still like kind of the links to Tennessee through family and whatnot. I remember driving by Belmont at the time when I was, you know, 15 years old, and then my parents said, oh, this is where your mom went to school. And I, you know, really had no interest in exploring the campus or
Delgamore.
You know, I just was like, oh, okay, whatever. I just, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, as the years kind of went on and I began thinking about the cost of college, you know, Belmont was a much more practical option, I think, so.
Todd, talk to me. The summer before, where were you? What city? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was in Owosso, Oklahoma, a little small town north of Tulsa. And kind of like Andy, I was semi-unemployed. I mean, I spent most summers mowing lawns for the head basketball coach of Owosso. So I was getting a little walking around money. But I, like Andy, I ended up working for, you know, the equivalent to a chemical company. It was like an injection molding place doing accounts receivable. Smelled terrible.
Oh, man.
But, you know, little odd jobs here and there. But, yeah, I was spending my summer just, you know, buying milk crates, because that's what you did when you prepared for college, right? You bought milk crates. That was the thing, kids. Kids, that's what we did back in 1993.
Do you mean like the plastic things?
Yeah, like that was always the idea of this sort of modular shelving slash, you know, tubs for carrying stuff. I mean, like that was like I must have gotten as graduation gifts like 17 milk crates that I didn't take with me.
They're the generic ones you got at Target, not actual.
Oh, yeah, no, they were definitely, the milkman did not come, yeah. I had a couple conversations with Andy that summer, because we knew we were both going to Belmont, and so we actually had a couple of conversations about, you know, who's bringing what. I've got a black and white TV, how about you, you know. That was kind of interesting.
Well, tell me, do you have any memories of those phone conversations?
Well, yeah, I mean, just in that they were, you know, 10 minutes long. They were utilitarian in nature. It was, you know, really exciting that I actually knew who I was going to be rooming with, which, you know, and leading up to, you know, we're 600 miles away from Nashville. So the idea of going 600 miles away to this place where I don't know anybody, it was very exciting. Andy and I had toured Belmont together and interviewed for a scholarship, I guess probably the spring of our senior year in high school, and basically hung out for 3 days touring Nashville, hanging out with a bunch of Belmont students. And so the idea that I knew somebody who I liked, and you know, that was exciting. So it was really just that eager anticipation of what college was going to be like. So talking to my future roommate and sort of figuring out, you know, well, what crap do you have? What, you know, I've got this, do you have this? And you know, it was just, there wasn't much to it beyond that. You're looking forward to going? Yeah, that'd be great.
just the idea of going from your hometown where you're quite enmeshed, and then you're going to go to a brand new city, and you're going to live with a stranger and share a small room and a bunk bed, which is smaller than the bed you're probably in.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing. And I like that you guys were working this out on the phone in advance. I wish we could go back and listen to like a recording of that tape.
Oh, it'd be great.
And listen for the Guineas.
We have that.
Oh, man. Eddie, talk to me. Your story in some ways is very similar, in other ways not as much. Oh. The summer before you came to Belmont University, what was going on?
Well, I did not take a ferry on a school bus across Lake Michigan. So. But I was working at a place called Johnson Boiler in their engineering department.
Apparently we all had some kind of industrial sort of experience. Yeah,
mine was full-time. Like, no, you guys in here, like, oh, you know, a little money on the side. Like, I was full-time. I wanted to be an engineer, but a different kind of engineer.
Ooh.
But I was in the engineering department, literally teaching... I figured out AutoCAD. You know, they were doing all technical drawings with pencils and pens, and I started figuring out this new technology called AutoCAD, where you could type it all in and build these diagrams and stuff. So I was doing that. I was kind of this whiz kid that was doing that for a couple summers.
Whiz kid with a ponytail and an earring.
I had no idea. Can you teach me AutoCAD?
Yeah.
Still?
So I would, yeah, I kind of, and I, you know, that's, I had done that in high school, try to, you know, took mechanical drawing and figured that out, and that's kind of what I took to this place. But I was doing, like, blueprint like, I don't even remember the process. I just remember it stunk like ammonia horribly. Who knows the kind of torching I did to my lungs, but I'm in some big room with making huge printouts of like of boilers and the parts of the boilers and anyways. But and then in the morning I would be doing a pool. I had a pool I cleaned and made a lot of money for little time. So I lived in Grand Haven, Michigan, kind of a beach town.
Yeah, isn't Grand Haven kind of a? It's like. It's the Miami of Michigan.
Everyone owns a jet ski.
Yes. That, we didn't, but my grandpa had a pontoon boat, which is kind of like, yeah. Like a jet ski.
The yacht.
Yeah.
The yachts of Grand Haven.
Yeah. Yeah. We did have the Sea-Doos, but so I did so that summer before. I probably spent a lot of time Sea-Dooing, and I remember having my last Sea-Dooing trip before I left for Nashville. But yeah, that was what I was up to. No singing.
No dancing.
No dancing. Full-time job.
When you thought about going away, this is just for anybody that wants to answer. When you thought about going away to Belmont that summer, and I know I'm asking you to remember something from a long time ago, was there an impression that you were an impression of Nashville or Belmont or both that you were particularly excited about that seemed critical? That you were going to go and this was going to happen.
After the tour of Belmont the previous summer, or that earlier that summer, probably spring of whatever, 92 or 3, well, I don't remember, but the spring before when in your shop, I just remember thinking how trashy Nashville was. And that neighborhood, I mean, seriously, I was like, really? We, you know, picked up a random hotel, which now when I see what hotel where we were, we just, you know, whatever the equivalent of MapQuest was back then, and you just
map
in 1-800 Comfort Inn or whatever, and we ended up someplace over where the stadium is now,
the Days Inn,
yeah,
by the stadium. Oh, wow.
Which is not a place where you still want to stay, but that's where we stayed, and I just remember thinking this is a little, and then even in like the heat of being here, I was like this kind of, their trees were bare and it just was not lush. I kept thinking, I heard that this place is wealthy and we're near Vanderbilt and that whole area, but it just was. So I came, I kind of came concerned, you know?
Yeah.
Really like, is this the town that I really want to be in? I believed in this program, that was the music business program that got kind of suckered me down here. And that's what I was excited about.
Which, by the way, I hate to play role of host for a moment, but I've got to, when you're talking about engineering and AutoCAD, how in the world did you go from engineering to music business in the span of like a month? I mean, like,
no, it was more than a month. I think I was just so into, I was into music and wanted to, I thought I wanted to produce it, but I quickly figured out that wasn't my thing. I played the drums and sold my drums to buy my car and figured I didn't, you know, after coming here, you realize those kids that did the commercial program, they were like sold out. I had not even an ounce of the kind of passion they had for their music. But I thought the technicalities of recording music and, you know, I'd spent some time in Grand Rapids at a studio and thought it was cool and thought, hey, this is, yeah, I'd love to record. That would be fun. I did my sound at church for like 5 years.
Well, you described being sucked into the music business, because I would say that was something that you asked the question, Jeff, about, you know, what...
The anticipation
of Nashville and or Belmont. I know for me, like, Belmont was this unknown commodity. I'd never heard of Belmont. My guidance counselor gave me this trifold brochure. Like Andy, I was thinking, Vanderbilt sounds like a great school. I've never heard of this Belmont. Nashville, on the other hand, when I traveled around Nashville and came back again, I would definitely classify myself as somewhat starstruck, which I'm embarrassed to say because now it seems kind of silly knowing Nashville the way I do. But at the time, it just felt like such a bigger place even than just the bigness of the city compared to my Podunk, Oklahoma town that I was from. I mean, it was much bigger than Tulsa, but at the same time, it was just, it had this star quality to it even then, you know, much more so now, I would say, you know, because it's expanded to more rock and, you know, many other things. But at the time, it just felt like, you know, anywhere you go, you could meet a celebrity. And, well, you know, for the small Oklahoma boy, you know, small town Oklahoma guy, that was pretty special.
I guess I have two questions all of a sudden about that, Todd. Garth Brooks is from the Owosso area, Tulsa area.
Well, he's from UConn. His wife went to Owosso High School, which is where I went. Or his ex-wife. His,
yeah, I was going to say.
Sandy Brooks.
Was, and this is all fall 1993 when we actually all got to Nashville. Was something like Garth Brooks on your radar at that time?
Well, so I like to think of the pinnacle of country music being somewhere in the early 90s. So, I mean, Garth was at his, you know, yeah, right around his peak, I think, around that time. So,
just a country music star the likes, which we really hadn't seen, because he was doing stadium concerts in the mid-90s, multiple stadium concerts in a row. And this is someone from your neck of the woods. And as I understand Garth's story, he came to Nashville and kind of did the small clubs, but got big quick. And the second thing is you were familiar with contemporary Christian music. Maybe there was a radio station or something. You knew about CCM. Is that a way of saying?
Well, I mean, you know, I grew up with the, you know, I had to sneak time with, you know, top 40 radio. I mean, I wasn't allowed
because
to
what?
Listen to secular
okay.
music.
like a parental thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I was very much plugged into, you know, Christian music, you know, and CCM even was sometimes kind of a stretch. I mean, it was like CCM was kind of controversial. I know how silly that sounds, but I mean,
no, I haven't seen.
But I mean, not just in my immediate family, but I mean, in the church at large, the idea, you know, there were more than a few, you know, furrowed brows when, you know, somebody would play Christian rap. Like, it was not cool.
Well, I wonder if you had this experience. Amy Grant was suddenly on pop radio where I grew up in Virginia Beach, and it wasn't to sing
Thy Word.
It was to sing Baby, Baby. And it was a pop song. It was not a Christian song.
She's a sellout.
There was a lot of talk that I remember of, hey, is so-and-so selling out? Mm. There's so many ways, of course, to sell out.
Right.
But that was some, I mean, I think if you had to pick a time of a lot going on in, if you had to pick a time of a lot going on in Christian music, when we started college and then Nashville, Tennessee, it was about as, I think the arc of Christian music.
It was a very interesting time.
It was a really interesting time.
Yeah.
Andy, was the Christian music thing, were you thinking about that? Was that on your radar? Was that in your life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
it was in our life, in our dorm room.
The you know, the tour that I mentioned was all of the catalog that we sang. It was a CCM. I mean, we did covers of these
Cindy
songs.
Morgan.
Well, give me, yeah, like what? Do you remember any of them?
Yeah, give us your set list.
Yeah, we did a Michael W. Smith song. We did DC Talk. I mean, it was an evangelical type of endeavor. I mean,
would you even have like?
We had skits. We had sketches that we did. You know, it was.
Did you make an appeal for folks?
Yes. I mean, there was
down and pray with someone or something like that. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the music in that business that you were doing, in the art that you were performing, the music, a lot of it you would maybe not even, I don't, you tell me, but you're eventually going to come to sort of a center that sort of organized that music.
I wasn't really plugged into that aspect at all. I mean,
he was just there for the dance.
I guess I had kind of a strange relationship with music, and maybe I still do, but I mean, my first concert that I remember going to, my friends, I remember my friends being in like
in high school, being in an English class, and, you know, the person next to me, Kelly Jacox, coming in with a U2 shirt on, for they'd gone to the concert in Madison the night before, you know. And it's like, when I think about what I missed out on, it's just like, whoa. I mean, I could have seen the cars hovering above the stage from, yeah, what show was that?
The Zoo Tour?
Yes. Yeah. It must have been Zoo. I don't know. But, no, my first concert was David Meese, who most people, even CCM people, probably don't even know who that is.
I know who that is. He came through my church. He used to say,
you know, I went to the New School Jam, the DC Talk, Dynamic Twins, and Heather and Kirsten in Deerfield, Illinois. I mean, you know, I was pretty plugged in to it, but I wasn't, it's not like, I just wasn't, I mean, I love music, I really do, but I don't. I guess I'm not a fanatic. You know, I don't really...
No, you're kind of a Dynamic Twins fanatic.
you know, I think coming to Belmont really did open my eyes to a lot of other... To music in general in a lot of ways, because there are so many really serious musicians, and if they're not musicians, they're music lovers or want to be, you know, involved in some aspect of music's production or business or what have you. But, so, I mean, you know, Jeff, you were an influence. I mean, your love of U2 and any number of other groups and individuals, you know, David Winston, Michael, who is it?
Michael Card?
No.
Winston. George Winston.
Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. Well,
deeply affected you.
To the core.
George Winston. I mean, you know, just being exposed to people who really had a passion for individual artists and groups. I just didn't have that experience. I mean, my parents never, I mean, other than the occasional, you know, 8-track or a record of Kenny and Dolly or of Elvis growing up, we just didn't listen. We didn't have music piping through our house on a constant basis. And so that wasn't really my experience. Just didn't have that relationship, you know.
I think that's, well, I think you're the normal one. I mean, there's so many ways to just affirm your relationship with music. I mean, that was kind of the experience that I felt I needed to do something about when I was coming to Nashville was, I would sit in my bedroom and listen to cassette and CD for hours, and I would pore over the sometimes they're called J cards, but the booklets, and I would look, especially with Christie music, I would look and like absorb every little detail in this tiny little print. And half the time it was like recorded in Brentwood, Tennessee, recorded in Franklin, Tennessee, recording at Quad Studios, Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you to Scotty Smith, my pastor.
Right? Yeah. This album is a part of the Art House in Bellevue, meaning the Bellevue area of Nashville, Tennessee. And I was 15 or 16, and I'm like, what is all this stuff? I have to know more. And so, Eddie, talk to me about any of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I didn't bring up Christian music, but it was big in my life. Whiteheart was huge in my life.
What album did you come in on with Whiteheart?
Come in on? Don't Wait for the Movie. And my dad had taken me... I think I just randomly got a cassette from my dad, kind of the Todd fashion. Not that I wasn't allowed to listen to pop music, but my dad hooked me up with something because Petra was in our mix a little bit. But, you know, looking for some diversity. So he went to Don't Wait for the Movie, and they came to a local college and shot a video, and me and my dad went, and kind of that bonding moment. But... yeah, so they shot a live concert, the whole thing. And I would just sit and watch the VHS of the show that I was at because they released it as a piece.
It's huge. When you're young, that's so huge.
Yeah, seriously. So, like, the liner notes and all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the shot, I remember the video, you could see the back of my head. We were in the back of the row, and there was a camera right behind us. And I just remember, like, that's the back of my head. I'm in that. So my sister was into music with DeGarmo and Key and eventually DC Talk, and so we appreciated that stuff together. And I don't know, but
I'm so jealous because, you know, my family was into Southern gospel, and so when we went to, like, the last family vacation we took before Belmont, the summer before, we went to Nashville, and I was like, Mom, Dad, come on, like, I'm going to be in Nashville for the next, you know, forever. Please, can we go anywhere other than Nashville?
Was it to check it out, though, a little bit?
For them, yeah. I mean, I checked it out. I'm satisfied. We're doing this. But we went to Opryland and ran into one of the Cumberland Boys.
I'm sorry. I'm not totally sure.
No, you don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to know who that is. Nobody knows who that is. But the Cumberland Boys, you know, was played off a cassette tape in our house on Saturday mornings when we cleaned house. And, you know, so, I mean, like, my parents, you know, were, like, yeah, I mean, wanted to get their his phone number, and maybe Todd would, you know, make a great connection and, you know, maybe end up in the music business somehow. So, you know, it's like there's a magnet that draws you into the music business.
Todd, can I just interrupt you? Will you tell the story about Carmen and your dad?
I was going to bring that up. Sorry, Dad. I will tell this story real quick. When I graduated high school.
Oh, that wasn't on this trip. For some reason, I thought.
No. This was in Oklahoma, because Carmen was from Oklahoma. So we went.
Wait, explain who Carmen was, because not everybody probably.
Oh my gosh! And kids, go look up Carmen.
Carmen is a female singer. Great.
Carmen is a male.
Oh,
Jeff.
Is it Carman? A man?
Yes.
Okay. Don't play dumb.
Come on now. But Carmen talked a lot during the songs.
I'm looking at a Carmen poster on your wall right now.
Carmen was, you know, one of the biggest things in Christian music in probably the 80s, right? So, along with Sandy Patty and a number of others. Oh my gosh, this is bad. We went to a steakhouse outside of my little small town. And it was a celebration of my graduation and my impending journey to Nashville. And Carmen was standing in the waiting area, you know, waiting on a table.
A regular guy.
Although looking more busy and, you know, more important than the rest of us. But my dad and my parents had gone to the Young Messiah tour, which Carmen was a part of. And this was, you know, a compendium of all the Christian top Christian artists doing Handel's Messiah, but in a very contemporary fashion. So my dad goes up and, you know, he starts shaking his hand. You know who's really good, Carmen? That Michael English. and Carmen says, "What's your name?" "Ron." "Ron, really good to meet you." And just immediately exit stage left. That's fantastic.
Oh boy. Well, it was important for me when I first came to Nashville to figure out some way of, in a humble way, of reconciling this Christian music passion that I was dealing with. And I ended up, finding out, and I think Eddie, you were a big part of this. We ended up going to Christ Community Church in Franklin, which was not close to Belmont. It's a good 30-minute drive. A bunch of Christian music kind of stars, so to speak, were attending there. Do you remember that time? I mean,
When 65 was just Tulane. It was.
It was almost before there was a Cool Springs. I mean, it was really maybe being built.
When we got here, I remember just the mall had just opened. And so there was nothing much around there. But
yeah.
Well, I mean, Bellevue Mall is being torn down as we speak. And we realized that it was built in 90.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That was a spot to go to.
Yeah.
Because they had Abercrombie & Fitch.
That's right.
And the old school Banana Republic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I remember you and me and John Ludlow and a couple other kids getting in the red.
We had a few young ladies. I think Allison McCommons went sometimes. Yeah. Man, there's somebody
that else. Red van. John's red van.
And sometimes we...
Amy Dixon occasionally went with us.
Matt?
Matt Turner may...
If he wasn't driving with us, he was driving. He was the car behind him.
but that really hits on kind of what I was saying. Like, even... Like, nobody was really immune from this notion of, like, the star power.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big draw, and that just seems completely different today. I mean, like, I don't know if that element still exists at Belmont.
I had such a hard wiring about being an evangelical Christian that needed to get people saved. And that was my upbringing. And this idea that Christian music was getting more popular and kind of more powerful in the world, and I was in the middle of it, and the music seemed to be getting a little better all the time, I was overwhelmed with how awesome this all was going to be. And
it was exciting.
And there was this sense of, well, not much longer now, and everyone's going to know Jesus. And there was an innocence to that that existed, to my imagination, then. I feel like the world has totally changed now. Of course, I've also gotten older, and I just think about the world a little differently. But there was an innocence to how I thought about Christian music, what I believed was possible with Christian music, what I believed Nashville was, sort of in this kind of... Nashville, you know, to state the obvious, it was just a smaller arrangement in the early 90s, and I'm sure people in the early 90s were like, well, you should have seen it in the mid-70s. You know, I mean, I think it's all relative, probably, but the feeling of the art scene was pretty small and tangible. That all colors and affects that summer and the beginning of my coming to Nashville experience. And I hadn't said it yet, but my job before I came here was I worked in one of the finest hotels. It was also a Christian hotel.
The only Christian hotel in the entire world.
Well, it really was the only five-star evangelical restaurant in the Eastern Seaboard.
It was called it still is called the Founders Inn. It's a part of the campus of the Christian Broadcasting Network. And but lest you think I was enjoying my work, I was in the dishwashing department, and I would constantly be thinking I was caught up with all the dishes, and then the one side of the dishwashing area was connected to the banqueting area, and I wouldn't even know that there was a banquet going on, and then I would see... I wish I could show you guys the pictures of this stuff. Just like automobile size, shelf carts, size of cars, coming down this hall full of dirty dishes. And it was all Christian conferences, and just, it was a fantastically horrible job. Because you're just throwing away and touching food that other people have messed with for 8-10 hour shifts.
How many baskets full of food was it? Was it mostly bread and fish?
Well, yeah, because it was all pre-prayed over, I ate whatever I wanted. No, it was...
Was it meat sacrificed to idols?
Right. talk to me about Pembroke Hall.
I love Pembroke Hall.
I want to
go back.
Does it exist?
Yeah, it does.
Let's talk about the dimensions. What would you say? Was it?
It was an above average dorm room. At least ours was.
Was it 15 by 15 by 15?
No.
Well, that
I'd say 25.
It was tall.
By 25.
No. Yeah. No. No. No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Oh yeah.
No. No.
Dude.
No.
17.
It wasn't any bigger than that.
Our room, which was 204.
204.
Was a cube. I mean, it had a very high ceiling, which was really nice, and it was just a square room.
But like, I toured OU before, you know, coming to Belmont. Like, I saw some small dorm rooms, you know, where really there's enough room for the beds. I mean, let's be clear, there was enough room for Andy to dance.
That's important.
It's like, hey, if I said, hey, Andy, show me one of your routines from Koinonia, you know, there was enough room. You know, including our beds and some shelves that we had, and
And there was enough room to pull out another mattress so I could do some dramatic like the mattress, we just slid it out into the middle of the room, and there was enough room.
Is it sort of an homage to Chris Farley? Or any,
I don't even remember. I just remember like Eddie, the silliness.
Eddie
just
did a lot of pratfalls.
Eddie would just do a lot of falls. And do you still do that?
Probably, no.
Well, that was pre-broken pelvis.
Yeah, that's, so, yeah, that was...
He was a little fast and loose with the pratfalls.
Eddie would eventually... I remember this clearly. You would break your pelvis during Christmas break of your first year of Belmont.
Yeah, came back from Christmas break.
I remember bathing you in the...
shower chair.
I've added some things.
On
some,
yeah, I was on some meds. I don't remember that part, but I do remember John, like, carrying my roommate.
Your shower caddy.
Yeah, my shower caddy, which he had just become my roommate because my first semester roommate was kind of creepy and weird, and he left and didn't return, but we went potluck that first semester.
Blind zombie.
He left.
I call him blind zombie.
And yeah.
Well, wait.
And so what? John Ludlow became my roommate coming back from that Christmas, and we had known each other from that first semester, but I think he was in a similar situation and lost his roommate. So he moved up into second floor. And yeah, so I came back a cripple. I mean, like I was.
But I mean, you mentioned the shower caddy. I mean, that's an important part of Pembroke life, was the communal shower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the room with four spigots. That had some effect on all of our lives.
It was to my mind particularly old school. It was a large bathhouse. It was pure Greece. It was like ancient Greece. I mean, I remember there'd be four guys, all obviously totally naked, just like talking
while two are going to the bathroom,
lathering up. Yeah, and then two more come in to do their business in the stalls.
And there was a whole currency of like yelling flush and things you had to do. Because the shower water.
You would
water
lose
got
your hot or cold water, and it became scalding hot. Yeah, it wasn't really, like it got cold.
It wasn't like something you could do. It was something you had to yell flush before the flush, or you would scald the person taking the shower as a toilet user. And then the classic, you know, someone would be like, whoosh. And you would be like, was that a flush? And you would jump and you would hear, I'm sorry, flush. And anyway, I became somewhat of a ninja with my moves of needing to move immediately out of the shower. As soon as I was just sensitive as soon as someone came into the Pembroke bathroom that... they were probably going to scald me, and it was up to me to not get scalded.
Well, I mean, as it is, we'd all seen enough prison movies to just be, you know, watching our six for anything that might happen. I mean, you just always paying, you know, always vigilant.
Eddie, could you, you know, you referenced, well, let me just back this. So for our listeners, Andy and Todd, you guys were always roommates, and you knew you were going to be roommates. So that was sort of checked off as terms of things to sort of figure out. I had a roommate from Maine that we had never met until we moved in together that weekend. He was a super nice guy, Rob Burrell. And Rob and I are friends today. We actually recently connected over Facebook. Shout out to Rob. And he ended up doing really well for himself, by the way. He became close with Michael W. Smith and helps. Anyway, he does a lot of great
stuff.
He's
keys, right? Like,
yeah.
Writing.
Yeah, he's a really sharp guy. Eddie, talk to me about what you remember of moving in with your roommate there in Pembroke Hall.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think I remember his first name, but it's probably best I can't even tell you his name other than Chris.
Yes.
But yeah, he was from South Tennessee and would go home every weekend, but he was just kind of a scary dude to me. Like, at the time, coming in, like, he was, you know, we were pretty... Rob Zombie fan, but like just a cusser and like just seemed to be angry and like would always, I had long hair and he would talk about, like joke about putting Nair in my shampoo going to the common shower kind of thing. Like that was like, so that was a legitimate fear. I didn't think he was joking. I like took him serious. Like he's going to put Nair in my shampoo. And like he'd come home every weekend with some crazy story. He didn't have a car and someone would pick him up and he'd like, nuts stories.
Well, is there any stories that stand out in your mind?
Yeah, there were, I mean, just like, I think, yeah, just rendezvous with, you know, girlfriends, moms kind of combo kind of stuff. And you're like, what? Like, that is not even on my radar. Like, that's, yeah. So
a whole other level of secularism.
Yeah, really.
I mean, you may not have been a huge Christian music fan.
He was not a huge Christian music fan. And so it was.
But I always wondered, why do those people come to Belmont? Because it just felt like such a protective environment.
That, yeah, his. You know, you wonder, I think, why. He had a family member, and she lived here. I think Great Aunt or something like that, who like said, "I'll pay if you go to this school." Because every once in a while, like I said earlier, he didn't have a car, so I would drive him to see his aunt out in some apartment complex out off of 440, and he'd pick up some spending cash or something. But there was some kind of arrangement that's how he ended up here for a semester. He was studying math or something like that, but I think he was brilliant and he just didn't care about
very
anything.
Angry.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, we never had too many conversations.
You said that you thought he just left at some point in that first semester and didn't come back?
Yeah, if I can remember correctly. It was kind of like the last couple weeks of the first semester, I was just solo. Hey, like, and I didn't have a problem with it at that point. Right. Because like, I knew I wouldn't lose my hair in some Nair crazy thing.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that was, yeah, that's kind of that story.
Do you all remember personalities from this? So, because we were all on the second floor, do you remember people from? Try, and you can focus on that because I know we were in Pembroke 2 years, but other people that you haven't thought of maybe in a very long time, maybe we could come up with a little.
Matt bit. Turner was on our floor.
Matt,
Scott Parker, David and Jeff, David Hanna and Jeff Mayfield.
Scott,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
Scott was Aaron's roommate, right?
Right.
Aaron
Sands.
Yeah.
Was
a whole bunch of baseball guys.
Was Aaron on our floor? Aaron Sands on our floor?
Yeah.
He was roommates with Scott.
That's great.
Come get your pizza.
Do you remember our RAs? Resident?
Adam and Lindsay, wouldn't it? Adam,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Adam.
Harry Frankenfeld.
Harry Frankenfeld.
Yeah.
That was Harry. Right? Like Harry?
Yeah.
And then who was at the end of the Scott and
Scott Scojo?
Oh yeah,
Scott Johnson.
Scott and Keith. He moved to Heron at some point.
Keith May.
Yeah. Scott Johnson and Keith May.
That was that crew.
Was there a time where it seemed like you knew every single, maybe not like BFF or something, but you knew everyone's room kind of
three quarters.
I remember not. I mean, it's. I think it's just a function of living for 8 or 9 months in a. I do remember knowing everybody's personality and who they were.
Yeah.
I was in the dorm. As your freshman year, you're in the dorm kind of a lot.
I mean, Eddie appeared naked to half of the floor.
No.
Just in your little, you know, okay, can you guys keep it down?
I did go to bed early. And so,
there was a couple of moments where, you come out naked.
Guys,
can you keep it down?
Forgot about that. Yeah,
the whole room full playing some kind of
it was just the hallway. Yeah,
you know, sort of baseball type game.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, but I think I went to bed early. Relative, it was probably still like 1-9. But I remember there being a lot of commotion in the hallway and me just, I didn't sleep naked, but at that time I thought it'd be funny if I pretended like I did and said, "Hey guys, can you keep it down?" And kind of came out like half like, "Oh, what? You guys, I can't sleep."
So look, there's two things at Pembroke that you just have to mention, like part of Pembroke life. One was visiting hours for girls. I mean, like that's a quintessential part of Pembroke life.
But not our lives.
Oh, sure. We had people over, but doors had to be open at a 45 degree angle.
Todd.
We had all that friends that came over, yeah.
Yeah.
Watch some movies.
Can you talk about who you remember coming over?
No.
Can you talk about...
Was the door open?
Yeah.
Okay. Did Eddie show up naked to your...
No.
Well, that was an issue. I remember specifically... It was the night of one of the dances that they would have, like winter formal.
Spring gala. Right.
And you know, we lived at the end of the hall in the corner, and so and the bathroom was at the middle middle point. It was a long kind of narrow hallway, and so, you know, when you got ready for a shower, most of us would just put a towel on and walk down to the shower.
Yeah.
And I was either going to the shower or coming back from a shower, and I guess it was during visiting hours the night before one of these events or something, and I passed Scott Parker's room, and he was in there with his girlfriend, and dude, I'm walking by in a hall, you know, down the hall with just a towel on, and it was just, you know, it was kind of like a...
Hey. Sup?
It was just sort of a funny...
You didn't stage an accident.
No, okay. I did not. But it was just sort of a funny thing, you know, it's like, oh, hey, you know, I mean, it's just a strange phenomenon to be in a place, like, socially, you know, they make such efforts to keep, you know, girls and boys in separate quarters, and they can only visit during these times, and yet, you know, because of the nature of the bathroom setup, it's like they're half-naked gentlemen wandering down the hallways with girls around. It was just an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, which all sounds so quaint in light of what we know to be true today. I mean, as far as even Belmont goes, where I don't think any of those rules still apply. I mean, they have co-ed dorms, you know, these days.
Really? But they don't have shower.
No, of course not. But I mean, but they have, like, co-ed dorms where one floor is boys, one floor is girls, you know?
Not as best you know, not necessarily, like, fully co-ed. Like,
No, it's not fully co-ed. Uh-huh. And they probably still have visiting hours, I would guess.
Probably so, but I mean, I'm guessing they don't have the 45-degree rule, which again, sounds sort of quaint, mm-hmm. you know, in 2015. The other dynamic of Pembroke was drums.
Oh, man.
Or any music.
2 to 4 was practice
hours.
Todd
and I had a very serious drummer that lived above us, and just, it was tough.
I had a very serious drummer that was my roommate for the second half.
But, I mean, there was more than a few times that, I don't know, we didn't have a broom, but we had something, right, that we banged on the ceiling when it was 4:30, well past drumming hours or musician hours or practice hours. And we would bang it on the ceiling. He'd bang back down, you know.
And keep going.
Kind of let you know, screw you, I'm going to keep drumming. And so we would spend a lot of time in the library between 2 and 4.
Well, but you mentioned something. I mean, I think this is worth fertile ground here. The quaintness of Belmont. But that's really, when you brought up doing this podcast, and I started thinking about what, you know, those years, like that time, and it's like it's kind of remarkable to me how innocent it really was. Like, we really, I mean, with what is going on, you know, in college campuses these days, and it's, I'm sure it was happening then too, but just not in our environment. You know, I mean, we're
sort of blissfully unaware of really bad things going on, you know.
And you know, I guess maybe the sacrifice of that we made was occasional boredom.
And oh, what a sacrifice it was.
But it really was, I mean, it's pretty unusual. It was, I think, an unusual college experience.
There's no question it was unusual.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite Lipscomb-like, you know, Lipscomb-esque with the curfew, but I mean...
Well, that's forced upon them. Somehow the four of us came together and kind of created that same dynamic just on our own.
Like I think it's called accountability.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, it was kind of a weird, you know. Jeff, this is your time to.
I just agree. I recently heard some music at a bar with my girlfriend. We're sitting, and I'll just tell you, it was. And I know this is the next year, pretty much. This music will reference, but this bar just started playing from beginning to end the album. Counting Crows, August, and everything.
It reminded me
just of being in Pembroke Hall, and I know that album kind of matured more in our second year that we were together. But I got Terry's like, "Why are you upset? Why are you being emotional?" I'm like, hearing this album from start to finish, like this, they're just playing this. I remember so clearly A Kind of Innocence.
Oh, there's a soundtrack to Belmont for me. I mean, you know, that is one of the albums of that soundtrack. I mean, I can't imagine.
I wonder if you guys feel similar or just have a comment on this. I went to a public high school, Kempsville High School, my 10th, 11th, 12th grade year. It was a suburban, kind of white, middle-class-ish experience. Very little drugs, very little gangs. I had kind of a... I was just a kind of a medium person, had a pretty good experience in high school, but it seemed socially pretty complex, and I knew who the rich kids were, and I knew who some of the messed up kids were. Messed up, usually, like, they weren't really into hardcore drugs, but just sort of like they were somehow on the outside of things. My experience of going to Belmont was this, it reminded me of going to some of the smallest Christian schools I went to as a little kid, where there was just not a whole lot going on. And the sense of a sophisticated social environment seemed like it wasn't there. I felt like I had come from a sophisticated social environment, and now I was in a pretty predictable place of, hey, most of these people are, they're pretty focused in some way or another on their majors, and they don't have a lot of philosophical things they're working out, or I don't know. And I'm trying to prove the point of it seemed like a place to enter into, and it was an innocence to it. And I mean, I think you said it well, Andy, about the boredom. I did feel kind of bored at times that first year. I look back now and I'm like, was it that? I'm almost sure it was my own fault. It wasn't like there wasn't plenty to do. And I realize now I probably mixed some fear in, which is getting to know different kinds of people. I'm sure Belmont had a ton of different people.
Yeah, I think they did.
Well, I think it's important to address the elephant in the room, which is boredom for us four is sort of code for not being able to sow our wild oats to the extent that we would like to. I mean, dare I say that Belmont was sort of, to me, an uncomplicated social environment, which for me, looking back, I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, the high school in some ways was more complicated in its social stratas. You know, Belmont was not. I mean, it was just sort of live and let live. There was, you know, the people doing their own thing, and there were sort of the people that were really interested in creating community, and we, you know, were willing participants in that community, and it was fun on some level. On the other hand, whatever angst that existed, you know, that we sort of classify as boredom or just sort of this, oh, it's all so funny now looking back that, you know, it was quaint. I think a big part of that was just this idea that I think we all sort of had this idea in our heads of what college was. Mm. You know, it was the, I don't know, for me, like, if I hadn't gone to Belmont, I had gone to, you know, I would have gone to Oklahoma University, where everything's Greek, you know, everything's, you know, it's just sort of the quintessential state school where, you know, you party, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, anywhere but Tuesday to Thursday, you know, otherwise it's party. And so that idea that's what college is, sort of this giant release of the, I've been under someone else's command for the last 18 years, and this is where I go and cut loose. You know, on some level we were able to do that because we had some freedom. We were able to do all the things that kind of we wanted to do, but we all sort of had this self-restraint of, you know, there's a line we don't cross. And on some level, that was a conflict. There was tension there because we wanted to cross the line, but we didn't allow ourselves to. We kind of held each other in check.
Well, and at the time, Belmont was officially a Christian college. Like when we got there.
Well, it was a caring Christian environment.
Yeah, over the 4 year, 5 years that we were there, like, it kind of disbanded that, but... We signed up for a Christian college. We were going to a Christian college initially when we went there. So I think the four of us are pretty, at the time, we're rule followers. So we're just we're playing by the rules. And yeah,
we tested the limits here and there, but I mean,
we got up on the roof once or twice or eight times, but Fidelity, I mean, that was about as crazy as it got for us, I think, but
at least until the townhouses. But neither here nor there. But I mean, I think that's one important point here is that the boredom, you know, it, like, I think there was plenty of opportunity to make it more, a little more exciting if that's, you know, if that's what we wanted. But I mean, on some level, we didn't want that. I mean, or it was sort of that,
well,
that
or
tension.
Or it was just a lack of creativity, I mean.
I guess, but I mean, you can only play so much Bible trivia, right? I mean, it was that idea that we were holding ourselves back.
Oh,
whatever we would look at is more exciting.
I just remember having like serious conversations about grace at those times, especially with Todd. Like, we come from different backgrounds, but really the same, like, in a lot of ways. We were just like, what does grace mean? And like, what, how much can we dabble in grace?
Yeah.
I remember having serious conversations with you
no
about
question.
That.
No question. Because college, I mean, you know, I look back and again, I don't regret one ounce of what I went through. You know, there's some parts of me that sort of say, oh, you know, you wish you could have had a little bit more of a quintessential college experience, which we didn't have. I mean, we had a bubble sort of college experience. But then again, Eddie, to your point, you know, that sort of discussion of grace, for instance. I mean, like, there's some, you know, really stretching conversations and some really, you know, interesting ideas that we talked about.
No, but we were talking about grace, like, what can we get away
with?
Oh, I
know. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, I was stretched so many ways in terms of what do I really believe? And, you know, and am I willing to bend on, you know, a number of different things? And so many things I really formed, you know, new ideas. And so college for me ended up being exactly what it's supposed to be, this thing that bombards all the preconceived ideas you have and challenges all of them and forces you to have a panic of like, man, what do I really believe about this? You know, for instance, alcohol. Like, I know how, you know, for anybody listening, that's, it seems silly to think that, you know, alcohol in college seems to be fairly synonymous. But Eddie, you know, you come from the Northeast, or, well, I mean, I know it's the Midwest, but I mean, for Oklahomans, it's the Northeast. But you, okay, put it this way. You come from a place where Christians can drink. I come from a place where Christians can't drink, you know, and so being challenged just simply on the idea, like, you know, the first time you had a beer, I'm like, what, like, my world was rocked.
Well, and it's funny.
And that's a good thing.
Well, even like, I think it was year 21st, and then we come back, and we waited literally, like we didn't drink, but maybe a few sips. I had turned 21 first, but I just remember specifically you and I getting like sloshed for your birthday. Coming back.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, sorry. Coming back and being in trouble with our roommates. Like, that's not in college.
Yeah,
right. We got in trouble because we came back and we were, like, just being silly drunk. And Jeff and Andy are just really discouraged with, I cannot believe the decisions you guys are making. I mean, it was Todd's 21st birthday.
But I look back on that and I'm just so thankful for that. I mean, you know, however silly that sounds, I mean, like, that's, I feel like that's exactly where God wanted me to be at that time, and it was a good thing.
Yeah, it's just funny to think.
Yeah, it is funny. It's hilarious, but it's, you know, but it's also sweet, and I appreciate it.
I do appreciate what you just said, Todd, with having a way of being in college that you are, in fact, growing. I think if I understood what you were saying right, it was you and Eddie talking about theological points, which is kind of funny because that's not maybe the most typical thing that you're growing in. But
on the contrary.
I mean, Andy, you and I used to sit up late talking about this or that. It was usually how far can we go with women, or in lieu of that, just ourselves. Or not you and I, but you know.
That part is getting edited.
Yeah. No. But there was such.
I don't remember.
There was. It was as if we, I think, in different ways, did carry a lot of a sense of boundaries. We needed to be thinking about boundaries a lot, and that is unique. Knowing you guys as I have for many years, I don't know if that's something that that most of my friends maybe have or not, like this just sense of boundaries about I guess personal decisions when it comes to these, I guess you could call them sins of the flesh or what have you, but it was this
that was unique to our college experience. And I guess it's nice to talk about that and get with the luxury of time to be able to notice that for what it is. In my interactions with college students these days, which are pretty infrequent, but you know, I work at a university and I'm around this area and I bump into them occasionally and have a conversation. It seems normal now to expect that college students are going to party. They're going to experiment. It is an experiment laden time. We typically just didn't engage that area. We had other things to do.
Well, I think part of it was that, you know, for all the stretching that happens when you're in college, we had, you know, it's a difficult time individually to decide what you're all about and to take all the things that have been pumped into your head over 18 years and then try to evolve from that. But I'm thankful that I had the three of you as sounding boards. And, you know, I mean, it was a good thing ultimately. And I think it's something that, you know, I look back on as being a precious thing that not a lot of people may have, that you're trying to figure this out all on your own. And we really kept nothing to ourselves. I mean, I think for the four of us, you know, it was really, we were all open books to each other. And I look at that as a really, really positive thing. We were all trying to figure it out together. And, you know, we were, you know, helping each other figure it out.
Well, I mean, I think it's a testament to the fact that this is, I mean, a podcast that Jeff brought to us together, but it's not like a reunion like this. The four of us have been together for 22 years, and we still meet up. We're still in the same town.
Four times a year.
Officially with the four of us, you know, I think we each get our single dates with each other. But yeah, I think that's pretty amazing that there's probably not too many people that can say, like, the four people I hung out with in college, like, are serious friends still 20-some years later in the same town, you know? That's,
yeah.
I mean, other than a short stint by Andy leaving us for like 3 or 4 years or whatever, but
six.
It was six.
Little while.
That was 6 years.
While.
Yeah, 2005 to 2011.
I pretty much erased that from my memory.
Yeah, like it's, no, it's yeah. I think it's pretty remarkable.
I agree. I am interested in that as well, Eddie, because I'm not. My impression is that it is special. We met within the first few weeks of college. You two, Andy and Todd, would have met, you know, because you're going to be roommates. Eddie and I would have met, I think, within... Are you able to pinpoint it? I would say within the first
couple of weeks, right?
No, it was days.
We had maybe a class or two...
I feel like we were just kind of like the orientation. What is that thing called? Freshman orientation.
Yeah, the towering tradition.
Yeah, that whole thing. And somehow, I just remember like my first moments of Jeff were in that common area, kind of, I don't even know what it was called, but the
student center?
But it was outside, kind of like that
open area by
the quad. But, you know, we ended up going to Newsboy show together.
We went to see the Newsboys.
Yeah.
Maybe it wore memorial out of
time. I don't know who had tickets, and I don't even know if I was a Newsboys fan before that. I don't think I was. I think it was like, oh, I've heard of them. Let's go. And we went to War Memorial.
Newsboys used to have a drummer that would rise off the stage.
They don't used to.
It's still happening.
He still does it.
They're not ashamed.
Yeah, they still do that.
Very good.
That's part of their shtick still.
So we all four met like within the first 2 weeks, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's ping pong.
Well, because you guys, somehow Jeff knew you two, and then I came in, somehow Jeff brought me into this relationship that he had with these guys that he met through. Maybe you guys are on the same Tower and Traditions or something.
Maybe so.
Somehow Jeff knew you guys. And me and Todd just had
Amy had met Jeff somehow.
That makes sense.
Well, I remember, Andy, I remember knowing in some very essential but not personal way. I was like, that's Andy. And I remember introducing myself to you down at a free concert that Belmont was giving of the Lounge Flounders.
Yes.
And there was free
Papa John's pizza.
Which, little did we know,
pizza,
that in and of
Andy
itself
will be there.
Is a motif for the rest of our lives.
Right. I mean, it really did kind of rule our activities for at least 2 years. I mean, it changed a little bit when we moved to the townhouses, but while we were on campus proper,
free pizza,
our activities were kind of dictated by where's the free pizza.
FCA,
SGA,
CMS.
Yeah. Whenever you just, yeah, I agree. The free pizza component. I had never had Papa John's pizza. It was a little better than any pizza I'd had before.
Yeah, it was just the garlic sauce.
Yes.
The dipping
sauce. But so meeting you at that Lounge Flounder show, which I will say was in the first week or so of college, that, and I remember, I hope not in a climber, I mean, I liked you, I wasn't climbing, but I was like, I hope I also eventually get to know Todd Colburn, and I was kind of like, I think they know each other. I don't remember knowing that you guys lived together in the same room. And then I wish I could remember the first thing the four of us did.
Ping pong.
It was ping pong when me and Todd were very competitive. And not, it wasn't like we played doubles or anything, but me and Todd.
No. He said he played ping pong while you two talked.
And me and Todd.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And Eddie and I developed a very quick but very intense rivalry.
A competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I can't say that I can remember who won or if.
I did.
Oh, whatever. Man. I mean, I do remember. I killed you.
All of us would have had cafeteria plans.
Mm, yeah. Yes.
And we probably would have sat together.
Eating a lot of cereal together.
Yeah, almost too much.
And a lot of waffles. A lot of
There was
Lucky Charms.
A lot of Lucky Charms and Captain Crunch.
I think that's one thing that kind of developed. I mean, we really spent a lot of time together and pretty much, you know, could be seen walking across campus as a foursome somewhat regularly, I think. And it's not as if we were totally closed off, especially in the early, like in the first 2 years of school. We were open to other people, but it's just like we were comfortable with one another and we had a good thing going. And so we didn't really feel the need to reach out beyond our borders.
Well, and at some point we kind of became a collective. Like we were really a singular identity.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of, yeah. It was it was kind of weird.
I haven't had that. That did not happen for me in other points in my life. It was sort of like an unusual, why four, why not six? I mean, maybe four is some sort of
magical
number.
But that's
what's
so awesome about it. Like it really was unlike any other set of relationships that I have.
So I, you know, yeah, I agree. It's a bit of a mystery, and I'm comfortable with that.
Each of us
came from different states. Let's see. And you or I may have come from the furthest away, but
we're
all about 10 hours away.
Yeah,
I'm 11-ish hours, 10 or 11 hours away.
I'm only 9.
I think Todd was the only one of the four of us that visited all of our hometowns.
Yes.
Wow. Which he would always...
In your cap.
Yeah, he was always proud of that. Because I was to Jeff's house, but I was never to... I went to yours for your wedding, Todd, but never made it to Madison.
I've been everywhere but Michigan. I mean, I've been to Michigan, but not Daddy's.
I have not... I don't think I've never spent... We went to a wedding in the bottom of Michigan one time, Andy. But I've never...
To Detroit.
Was it Detroit area? Yeah. I don't know if we went downtown or anything.
It doesn't matter. That's not even where
they were married in the Pontiac Silverdome. It was auctioned shortly thereafter.
I guess if it's just as we wrap up, what for me has been a really enjoyable kind of a walk down memory lane. But I get maybe there's two questions. Let me ask this one: is there something that seemed unresolved when you were coming into Nashville, coming into Belmont that first summer? There's something about it was particularly unresolved that now is, I'm just going to use a really vague term, something that was unresolved, but now it's better. regarding work, family, social life.
I can speak to that.
Nope.
I think, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, I was coming into Belmont as a chemistry major. I mean, I was interested in science and I wanted to pursue that. And at the same time, though, I think this was one of the reasons I came to Belmont is I had this sort of interest in, you know, I didn't know if it was a calling or not, but I kind of was attracted to some element of ministry. I don't even know if you guys knew that, but I kind of thought, well, I was struggling with whether or not I should be involved in, you know, youth ministry or something like that. And I guess I felt like at least at Belmont, I could, if I decided to do that, there was a pathway for that. Whereas if I had gone to a big state school, you know, there really wasn't a way to pursue that there, at least that I knew of. And so, you know, I just wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I mean, as most freshmen probably aren't. And it took, you know, 4 years for me to figure it out. And on some level, I think I've never figured it out, but I definitely, I mean, by the time I was a senior and about to graduate, I mean, I kind of discovered, art my senior year at Belmont, and that became a passion of mine. And I ended up, you know, pursuing that really as my, I mean, career is a strong word, but
vocation.
Yeah, I've definitely that's been the thing that's sort of guided my interests for the past 18 years. So I don't know that has much to do with what you're asking, but I felt like I identified with that question on some level, just because it was something I was very concerned with. Because I mean, kind of going back to how we operated. At that time, I think we all kind of just, we had a desire to kind of do the right thing, you know, and whatever that was, we were kind of seeking that. And I wanted to do whatever it was that I was supposed to do in terms of my life and my career or whatever. And I guess that's what it
was. No, that's good.
You found your wife at Belmont.
Oh, yeah. And
hey, Laura. hey, girl.
Andy's, there's some stuff going on behind the camera. Andy's a lovely wife, who's also a friend of mine, is faculty in the business school.
Yes.
Laura Mitchell.
Sup, marketing.
And let me ask Eddie or Todd, who are quickly losing their ability to sit here and deal with this podcast. Oh. Either
it's more Andy's long.
Answers. He was trying to peel back the layers, and I appreciate it.
And you're like, what?
And he's not even here to defend
himself. Let me phrase it this way: if either of you two could go back and visit yourself as you showed up on move-in day, and pull yourself aside and back in time, this is Back to the Future version. Mm. What if you could spend 3 or 5 minutes with yourself in a strange wormhole? Would you say something encouraging, or would you be like, "Get the hell out of here"?
I think I'd say, grab some Apple stock. today, grab some Apple stock. And, I don't know, chill out. Like, I think we took it
a little serious.
Not that it all turned out good, but, like, I think we could have had more fun. And not, like, party fun, but just, it would have just...
Taken ourselves too seriously.
We took ourselves too seriously. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, we could have made more friends.
I identify with that. I know what I would have told my first day self, which is, it's going to be okay. I remember, like, I half attempted to journal. This is not a sort of an end note, but it's really more of a beginning note. But I remember the first Friday night at Belmont that I experienced with nothing to do. Mm. Andy had something to do. You guys were out doing something, and I was literally in the dorms alone. And
you were playing hook ping pong or pinball.
No. I was in my room and I felt like there was some kind of concert going on maybe, or I don't know. I mean, like you hear all kinds of, you know, noise of fun happening outside your window. And I just remember feeling about as miserable as I've ever felt in my life, just super lonely. And I remember trying to journal, trying to record just how miserable I felt, because it was just like, I just don't do well alone. I like being around people. And it just felt like, wow, everybody has something going on and I don't. Mm. and with Belmont being sort of an extension of high school in some level, it just sort of had that carried that same pressure of like, there's fun and great things being, fun being had, and I'm not part of it, and somehow that makes me less than. And I think that would be the one thing I would tell myself is, it's all going to work out. Yeah. You know, it's okay.
What I hear you, and I insert myself in this too, there was some sort of perfectionism that I think I still deal with. I'm like, things have to be perfect or they're all kind of shit. Things have to be just like this movie in my head of my life, or else they're really going very poorly.
Yeah.
Which is not how life works. And we're constantly dealing with a pretty sweet mid-range of experience and emotions. And those need to be good enough, because very rarely are you going to be inside the movie in your own head of your life. I appreciate that. I think if my 60-year-old self could come back to today, if I suddenly went to the bathroom and there he was on the toilet or something, first he would say, "Hey, wait."
I'm not sure I follow.
But second, I think the main advice is, don't be a perfectionist, and don't force something to happen in isolation, whereas you could be present with other people right now. And I think that rolls out to, hey, the relationships you have in your life are the best possible relationships you could have. Don't be climbing onto some other. Stay with what you exist and be in the life that you are given. It's all a gift. You're supposed to be in the middle of it. Don't hold those things at arm's length, thinking there's something you're missing. Is what I hear you saying. Final question. You guys, this is a chance for worldwide plugging of whatever you're into, whatever you would like for folks to know about you. We're going to put some stuff in the show notes about who you are and where you are. But, Todd, what does the World Wide Web need to know? What would you like for them to know?
You really don't need to know anything about me.
What if I'm about to open up the option for, I don't know, a business insurance?
401k. Jeff, I am, despite being an accounting and finance major, I'm in the investment business, and I manage corporate retirement plans. So if you are interested in setting up a corporate retirement plan, please call 615-742-8735. That's 615-742-8735. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Colburn.
So just the word.
My website is www.todd-colburn.com.
No, this is good. This is what I want.
It's not.
I want to connect people with you, so absolutely.
If you love everything I had to say today, please follow me on Twitter, where you will find.
I know you're really involved with your family. Todd has a beautiful family of 5 children.
Thanks, Jeff.
And your lovely wife, Jen. And, you guys are really involved with so many good things, including you've been members at Grace Community forever.
Yeah.
So that is pretty awesome. If somebody wants to get to know you better,
come find me at Grace Community Church.
Bring on the grace.
There we go.
Andy, what's up? What would you like to plug, say?
Well, as mentioned earlier, I'm the husband to Laura Mitchell Harding, who's professor of marketing at Belmont. And we have 2 children, Maeve and Hazel. I am an artist. I've got a show that's actually at Belmont opening on Thursday. The reception is from 5 to 7.
We did not plan this to be, but it's pretty amazing that this show is at Belmont University.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
That's cool. I like it.
But yeah, it's sculpture. The show is called Ghost Structures.
I like it.
Thank you.
That was Eddie providing a ghost. Speaking of Eddie.
Oh.
What would you
think? I mean, I don't know if I can speak for all four of us, but we will be at this event if everyone would like to come meet us, get autographs, whatever. We'll be at the ghost show. What's your question?
Talk to me about your company.
Yeah.
You're doing stuff.
Well, I took that AutoCAD thing, forget the regular music engineering, and became a kind of a designer and marketing guy. And I have my own company. Yeah. Been doing it for 10 years. It's Boerhaus, BoerHaus.com. Not an amazing website, but I build websites. So that's where you can find me. And Eddie, Eddy, Boer. You can find that on Twitter or whatever. Yeah.
One thing the world needs to know is you are very talented with graphic design, including...
Thank you.
You've done some of Toby Mac's recent art.
Yeah, the last few things.
The last few things, Toby Mac of DC Talk, Toby McKeon fame. So anyway, Eddie is a great guy to get to know, and if you're famous enough, he'll do some graphic design for your albums. Yeah. Guys, have we had a pretty good time? Has this been good?
Yeah. It's funny because it is our normal conversation, so I'm glad we got it on tape. Like, this is a typical conversation, but now there's just a mic in front of my mouth, and we're just, we caught these moments on tape, which is cool.
Next time we get together and just want to relax, we can just play this in the background and not have to worry about actually saying much to each other.
Sure.
Colburn, Andy Harding, Eddie Boer, and yours truly, Jeff Little. Four guys trying to look back to when they first met 22 years ago at Belmont University. I hope you found the energy of the conversation pleasant. And I hope that you are able to enjoy some relationships, maybe today, maybe this week, sometime soon, that go back a little ways. That's been my observation with recording this and doing this, is just when someone knows you a while, it's pretty sweet. Now is the time to quote, is it the old country lyric, you can't make new old friends? Well, anyway, the point is, I'm super thankful for you, dear listener, and for these guys. Thank you, Belmont University, who I give a hard time to a little too often. If it's that important to you, Belmont, to say you're 125 years old, okay. Belmont was established in 1951, but they are claiming some additional heritage. And you know, I need to let that be okay. Thank you again. Until next time, this is Jeff Little for The Attentionist. Desperate to find wonderful life.